A call to live, a call to die, a call to spend your life for Jesus, here and around the world till He returns. These are the stories and conversations about God's mission and the people dedicating their life to it. I'm your host, Paul Aiken, Provost and Professor of Missions at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. This is Amazon to the Himalayas.
This is Amazon to the Himalayas podcast. I'm your host, Paul Aiken. This season, we're focusing on different mission organizations. And in today's episode, we'll be talking and learning about Launch Global. Launch Global is a training organization that connects local churches and their members with unreached people around the world. Launch Global staff has sent over 500 global workers to the unreached since 2014. So over the last decade, have been very effective in mobilizing, training, and sending people out through the context of the local church. I'm talking today with my friend Andy Campman, who is the U.S. Director of Launch Global. Andy, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background?
Yep, you bet. I grew up in small town Iowa. Most Texans, where I live now, don't know where that is. They just kind of know Oklahoma and everything north. So grew up in Iowa, been married for 21 years, 4 great kids. So trying to figure out, 3 of those are teenagers. So like Paul, like you, just trying to figure out how to do life and phones and driving and all these things. But that's a little bit about us here in Austin, Texas.
Yeah. So now I want you to tell us about the organization, Launch Global, some of the history, some of the background. How did it get started? Why did it get started? What was the original goal and purpose of the organization?
You bet. My wife and I both have a background in college ministry, actually. So she did that with the Navigators. I was part of a church-based college ministry, and we loved that season of our lives because God affected both of us radically in college. What we saw as God began to awaken a passion for His glory among the unreached in our own hearts, and we'd help students do that, they're like, man, I want to give my life to that. And so graduating college students kind of felt like one end of the pipeline, this incredible resource that was just coming out every year, all these great college graduates that wanted to change the world. And then it was about 20 years ago that we learned about unreached peoples for the first time. So not different than the people down the road that just have access to the gospel. Maybe they're unevangelized. Maybe they've never heard the gospel. But the difference is they have Caleb, they've got you, they've got this podcast, they've got all these great churches, and they can hear the gospel, but unreached don't have any access, right? And so you talk about these things all the time, 3 billion people, 7,000 unreached people groups. And so over here, you've got incredible need. Over here, you've got incredible resource. And it felt like there was a piece of the pipeline that was kind of missing. And so we kind of joked and said, what if we, along with Steve Shadrach and another couple in Oregon, what if we started kind of like the eHarmony of the missions world and began to join incredible resource, college graduates, folks in their 20s, and we've since kind of gone up to 35, all the way to unreached people groups and help people discover and train them on what it would actually look like to be among the unreached. But one of the problems was what we discovered real quickly is, man, we can do that, but who are we actually sending there? And if college graduates don't know how to make disciples, don't know how to get in the Bible with people, don't know what to do with somebody once they've said yes to Jesus, then what are they going to reproduce when they're in Turkey or India or Nepal? They're going to reproduce the same thing. And so that's where we started to really push into the training side and say, man, we need to teach people how to make disciples that make disciples that make disciples, not in the mentor sense where, you know, an older believer meets with a younger, that's biblical and good. But where we're actually in what I would say the Matthew 28 sense, actually making disciples, you going into your coffee shops or your pickleball courts or wherever and saying, man, we're going to engage with the lost, get them in the scriptures, lead them to faith, and then teach them to reach the rest of the pickleball club, you know, because that's the very thing we're trying to do when we send them there. And so we've been trying to do that, for the last 20 years.
Okay. Awesome. I appreciate you sharing some of that background. So yeah, I think I appreciate the clarification as well, because I mentioned in the intro that we're talking to different mission organizations, but sometimes that takes a different flavor. Sometimes you have people who are more focused on sending, some that are more focused on resourcing, some that are focused on kind of coming alongside the local church and training. And I think you guys would be more kind of fit better in the category of kind of a training organization. So maybe could you talk to us a little bit about kind of what that training program looks like? Practically, talk to us about that a little bit.
Yep. So a few maybe distinctives, and there's a lot of great, man, I think God's going to reach the world through a lot of different organizations, a lot of different churches, a lot of different strategies. And so we just want to be the first to say, we're not the only ones doing this. There's other great ones out there. But maybe some things that maybe are a little bit different for us is about a year and a half before we moved down in Austin in 2011, we really got this strong conviction that mobilization and training needs to be done through the local church, not just beside it. And that was a lot different than, you know, a lot of organizations will bring you to a different place or, and there's nothing wrong with that. Again, that can be a great strategy, but we're like, man, what would it look like for the local church to own the training of their people? And so we said, man, let's do that. And so we came down here to Austin, to Austin Stone, and jumped in. They already had a vision for the unreached and sending the unreached, but they didn't really have a clear infrastructure or a way to train their people, especially one that pushed into things like prayer, abiding, disciple making. And the reason I keep bringing up disciple making is because I think any healthy church plant, the core of it, especially among the unreached, has to be making disciples. And so making disciples has to lead to planting healthy churches. Otherwise, what are we really doing? You know? And so we began to just say, man, it has to be through the local church. And so we actually, when we came down to Austin in 2011, it was the missions pastor's idea, not mine. He said, if you don't care about the name Launch Global, which we don't, and it was a different name then, but same, same. He said, why don't you just become the Austin Stones mobilization department? And so you'll have an Austin Stone email, you'll show up to the staff meetings. And there were other interns and things like that with the Stone. So it just kind of made sense. And the Austin Stone was already trusted, right? So then people were just like, man, if they're raising their hands to think about going to Nepal, we're like, oh yeah, just talk to our MOB team. And so but the difference was the whole MOB team raised their funds through Launch Global. And so the church, even from year one, we had like a 3-person just mobilization team. And that grew to, I think the biggest we had, it was 12 people. But that was all just mobilization. And so doing that through the local church is, I would just say, one of the distinctives. But then here's how that starts to play out. Is that a lot of times people think, well, man, if you've got so many people focused on global and raising up like missionaries, long-term folks, isn't that going to kind of butt heads with local outreach? And we'd say, no, actually, they're one in the same. And it helps because of how we, this would maybe be a second thing that we really focus on, is we want to do a lot of hand stuff. I would say most training focuses on heart and head. And that's not bad. We do some of that too, but we're usually pretty weak when it comes to the hands. And so we're really big on this Mark 3:14 idea where Jesus, it says, Jesus chose 12 apostles that they might be with him and then send them out to preach. And so there's this width factor that we see in the life of Jesus that he was like, come on, boys, and the ladies that sometimes gathered him, depending on which version of The Chosen you want to watch, you know, like, and it was awesome because he was doing it with them. He was showing them how to heal the sick, how to proclaim the gospel, how to interact with the Pharisees, et cetera, how to love people. And we're really big on the hands. So we're not going to do a lot of teaching on prayer. We're just going to pray. And we're just going to get in people's living rooms 3 to 5 times a week and just say, man, we're going to take Luke 10:2 serious. There is a harvest. Jesus said the way to get to the harvest is through earnest prayer. And so we're not going to talk about earnest prayer. We're just going to try to get together and try to pray earnestly and then deal with our emotions. That's really exciting for the first 2 weeks. But what happens, kind of our bread and butter is a 9-month training thing. What happens when it's the beginning of December? Now the newness has worn off. And will we still press in and trust Jesus at his words when we haven't seen him do what we were asking him to do in our very neighborhoods? So maybe the local church, the width factor. And then maybe one other one that I just say is helping churches have a clear pipeline to actually get to the nations. I would say most churches kind of maybe fumble the ball. They have a passion for the nations and maybe sending to them, but they don't have a team. They don't have a process. And so if somebody raises their hand after the preacher preaches about the nations, Revelation 5:9 or whatever, and they're like, I want to do that. And they're like, go to one of these agencies. And again, that's not bad, but there's no process to help them really discern. And so what I would say, one of the things we do is really extend the Acts 13 moment where Paul and Barnabas are sent out and say, let's discern with you in the context of the local church, what your role is supposed to be. And so that doesn't mean everybody goes. And the people that don't go aren't failures. We actually only send about 40, 45% of the people that we train and train like for those 9 months. And that's not a fail because the stats say so many people come back. Over half the people will not return for a second term. They'll come home before those first 3 years or not return for a second. And we just think, man, I think we can do better by doing more training here, more discernment here, so that we can send, by God's grace, better goers, better missionaries.
Wow. Amen. I love the focus on the primacy of the local church in this process as you guys are training. I love the fact that you're like, yeah, I understood what you said. You're not knocking people who are doing more extraction models or pulling people out, but you're just trying to make sure to see it happen in the context of the local church and that it's going to yield benefits both locally, because it's going to transform that community as people are going out and doing these things in their own context, but then also with a view towards the nations and getting people across the ocean around the world as well. I'm here. I'm interviewing you from Southern Seminary. I'm at a theological institution. We've got a college. We've got a seminary. I would love to hear you talk a little bit about the role of theological education for potential missionary candidates. You know, how do you think through that? Do you think it's something that's needed? Do you think it's a help? Is it a hindrance? How do you think through theological training and preparation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's orthodoxy and orthopraxy, right? And so again, the other way you could describe it is head and hands, and maybe the spiritual formation part is the heart. And so I want to hold up the value of both. I think historically, when people raise their hand to quote, be missionaries, it's weird for me to say that term. We always say goers or workers, you know, but for the audience, it'll just be easier if I say missionaries. Historically, when people raise their hand, that was the pastor's first thing he told them. Go to seminary and get some Bible training. And I would say that's not bad. Who doesn't need their theological education or their theological camps fortified? Because you're going to be pressed in ways that you never, you're going to meet Muslims when you go to the Middle East. You're going to meet Muslims that are godlier than you. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to wrestle with maybe the exclusivity of Christ, or does somehow Jesus's blood still kind of cover this guy because he's doing the best he can and he doesn't have access to the gospel. And so if you don't have your pieces about the exclusivity of Christ really firm in your heart, you're going to get messed with or suffering. Right. And how does suffering in the sovereignty of God, because you're going to see suffering happen to really innocent people in ways that you've never imagined in the U.S. And so if you don't have some foundations about how suffering and the sovereignty of God fit together, I would say, man, it's really helpful. On the other side, I'd say, man, what often happens is we cover orthodoxy, but we forget about orthopraxy. And so we got guys that can tell you all the ologies and isms, but when was the last time they shared their faith, especially with somebody cross-culturally? If you told them to go to the mosque and talk about Jesus, they would be terrified, but they can give you 10 scriptures on communion and what's the big theological word, trans, whatever.
Transubstantiation, yeah.
Thank you. And so, which is awesome. And man, people need to know how to think about that. And man, we don't want to send you to India if you not had Hindus in your home and don't know how to not just have Jesus added as another God along with the hundreds or thousands or actually millions of other gods that they have. And so there really has to be both. So where we focus is on the orthopraxy side. Most of the churches that we partner with, Paul, have some kind of theological training that's also about a year. And many of the seminaries will actually afford credit to them. And so we just say, man, make sure to do both. And then we'd also look at and say, because really we're kind of assessing and training at the same time when we think about these potential missionaries or goers. We'll just say, man, is this person a newer believer? Then maybe some more theological education would be really helpful. If they've been around the church world for 2 decades, they kind of grew up in church. And you know what? Especially because we're focused unashamedly on the unreached, those with no access, we're saying the first part of getting to healthy church, yes, it is important to have healthy theology, but we just need people to share the gospel and get some churches started. And so it doesn't take a lot of weighty theological training in order to share your faith and get people in what probably is going to feel a lot like a community group to begin with. As that work sustains and gets healthy, then by all means, let's bring in more of the shepherd teachers to help fortify the theology.
Southern Seminary has strengthened our Master of Divinity degree to make it more effective than ever at preparing you for a lifetime of faithfulness. Your MDiv is now specialized as you can use your 7 elective courses to extend your study and earn graduate certificates in areas like missions, Islamic studies, world religions, church planting and revitalization, and many more.
Learn more about Southern Seminary's new MDiv at sbts.edu/newMDiv.
Can you talk a little bit about the type of work that some of the missionaries you guys have sent, you know, 500 plus over the last decade or so? Can you talk about the work that they're doing around the world? Are they doing church planting? Are they doing marketplace work? What's some of the type of things they're doing around the world?
Yeah. So I can't stress it enough. And I mean, the way that I look at the book of Acts, you've got kind of the first half that really focuses on more of a Petrine type call. And that's to establish the gospel where it's already strong and going. That's Peter and John in Jerusalem. And then really in 13, we see the shift to a more Pauline type calling or ministry that Romans 15 focuses on, where the gospel isn't, where there's no gospel foundation. And so we unashamedly say, because 99% of all the 420,000 missionaries in the world go and do Petrine type calling. They're going to people that already have access, while only 1%, it's actually less than that. Some will say as great as 3. So somewhere between 1 and 3% of that 400,000, 420,000 are going to the unreached. So we're going to almost exclusively do the exact opposite. And we're going to send 97, 99% of the people we train to the unreached. And so when it comes to what they're doing, there's the whole, as you can imagine, if you send a good number of folks, there's a whole gamut. And so we've got people doing some business stuff. Although I'll just speak to that real quick. Here's my hot take on that one. And then I'll get to a B. Barnabas approach. When it comes to business's mission, there's been a lot in the last maybe decade, 15 years of like, this is the way that the Great Commission is going to be finished. And I think that's possible, but I think here's three reasons that most business's mission things fail. Number one, people don't get training. They don't get training before they go. And so what they reproduce is what they're doing currently in their business, and that's not reaching their office building. That's not reaching their neighborhood. And so again, they don't get any kind of training, and not to mention, they don't examine their marriages, their parenting, their singleness, their addictions. We're pushing into all those things in our training. And because they don't get training, that's number one. Number two, they don't join teams. So they go to work for Google in Dubai or Hyderabad or wherever, but they just are kind of out there by themselves. And so maybe on the weeknights and the weekends, they're doing a little, but they're not a part of a team strategy that's all trying to reach this people group, this unreached people group with the gospel. And the third one is they don't get any coaching. If they don't have a coach from the region that knows what the issues are and how do we actually plant healthy, sustainable churches and what are the obstacles and what thing, these are the three reasons that I think most BAM folks don't do well. And so when we send out business folks that want to do business, we're trying to press into all three of those. The other one that I'll just mention real quick is we're really trying to train the majority of our folks to have more of a Barnabas mentality rather than a Paul mentality. Here's what I mean by that is, a lot of times how some of us got even motivated to do these things, we're like listening to Ananias Judson and William Carey and George Lyle and Lottie Moon and et cetera, Betsy Stockson, all these different names. And that's awesome. But that day has kind of passed. And here's why I say that is most of the countries in the world that have people groups in them, unreached people groups, especially if you go to the capital, it may not be huge, but you'll find some believers that are from that country, especially in countries, the larger the country, the more complex, India being the most complex. But if you go to Dhaka, Bangladesh, you're going to find some believers there, some churches. And so finding churches that have a vision to reach all the unreached people groups in their country, and then coming alongside of them and saying, how could I help you with the vision God's already given you? Another way to think about it is to say, I'm going to be like Barnabas. Barnabas found Paul and helped during that first journey, Acts 13 and 14, really helped. You probably preached this sermon, right? Like you see, it goes from Barnabas, Paul. And then by the end of the two chapters, by the end of that first journey, it's Paul and Barnabas, because Barnabas was lifting up and putting Paul in front of him. And I think that's the primary role of the Western church now, is to look and say, God, we believe you have local Pauls and maybe Junias. We can argue about Romans 16 later, you know, whether she was apostolic or whatever, you know, but like women and men that have a vision to reach all the people groups in their given country and to find those folks and work through them. And so like we've got three teams in Southeast Asia and their country. In the last 8 years, Paul, they've seen over 1,200 believers say yes to new believers and baptized. That's just the baptized believers. But here's the best part. Guess how many they've baptized? less than 10.
Wow.
Because why? Because the indigenous folks from that country are the ones doing the baptizing. And so our folks are simply kind of that catalyst come behind alongside the local Pauls. They're the ones doing the work. And so during COVID, guess what? The work didn't stop because our folks had to come back to the States. The work kept going because they have a passport that never expires because they're from there. Right. And so their language is perfect. They're used to living like the people. They understand all the nuances. And so you find those folks that the Holy Spirit is already living in, and you empower them and maybe grow their vision. But a lot of times you don't have to grow their vision. You just have to find the ones that already have the vision and say, how can we practically help you with what God's put inside of you?
Praise the Lord. I love hearing those kinds of stories. Can you talk a little bit about kind of what your reach looks like, at least in North America, and kind of how many cities are you in? How many churches are you connected with? What does that look like? Yeah, what's the current picture of all that?
Yeah, we're by God's grace. And again, I just want to make sure, like, even when you say things like build better missionaries, it's the Lord doing the work. We don't trust in our training. We don't trust in our chariots or our horses or our little programs. We trust in the name of the Lord. And so I just want to be real clear that at the end of the day, the Lord's the one, just like John 6, he draws all men to him. So he's the one that draws, right? So it's not my excellent gospel proclamation that is saving people. It's the work of the Spirit of God. And so I just want to make sure that God's the one getting the credit as we start talking about numbers and stuff. So, but 19, by God's grace, 19 different cities, mostly scattered across the South. If I'm honest, we've got a few like Lincoln, Nebraska and St. Louis that are on the edges. We've got some in Virginia and North Carolina, but then all the way to Riverside, California. And so working with about 23-25 different churches. And so by God's grace, what we'd love to see is that everybody would have access to this training and really trying to draw, especially a 2-hour radius around the cities and the churches that we're working with, and just saying, man, if you're in this radius, come and get trained by us. So for example, whether it's here in Austin or the Village Church in Flower Mound in North Dallas there, because Matt Chandler has a large voice, right, that influences every year, they'll have multiple people that'll move to Dallas for 1 to 2 years and get trained by our crew there and then be sent out by their church. The other one is more of a hub idea where if you take Auburn and you drew a 2-hour radius around Auburn and say, man, if you're from a church of 300 people, come move to Auburn and get trained there. But on the weekends, go and worship and be loved on and love on your local body and still be sent out by that body. Our deep desire is that we would, through the context of the local church, be training more and more folks so that they could last longer. And longevity is not just the name of the game. We unashamedly are going after fruit. And if you read John 15, I'm like, I think it's okay to ask for and believe God for fruit and even more fruit, that our fruit would actually increase. And so we unashamedly want to send people that are going to see fruit. We don't want to see the number, that stinking unreached number, stay at 7,000. We want to drive that sucker down by God's grace. And so, yeah.
Master of Divinity students can save over $1,800 each semester by training for ministry on the Southern Seminary campus. Join us for our next Southern Seminary Preview Day to learn how the Master of Divinity will prepare you for a lifetime of faithfulness. Register today at sbts.edu/preview.
I want to shift to some more lightning round kind of questions. First one is favorite missionary biography.
Oh man, I probably got to just go with Jim Elliot, and whether it's through Gains of Splendor or End of the Sphere, just that's the one that God used so much in my own life, and reading about the man he was before he became the man that everybody knew. That's the takeaway for me.
Amen. I always knew you were a guy after my own heart, Andy, but that would be the same for me. Jim Elliot, the Lord used that in a powerful way for me in college. Funny, crazy side note, I actually share a birthday with Jim Elliot. So both of us are October 8th birthdays. So he's a couple decades older than me, but you know, share a birthday together, which is kind of cool. The next question is a fill in the blank question. The greatest challenge facing Launch Global today is blank.
Leaders.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Leaders at the end of, like, say that we talk to a new church in Minneapolis or in Denver, right? The thing that we need is somebody to kind of pioneer that work and get it started. And just like when you're starting anything, it takes leaders, leaders with a vision and faith to get a group of people to do something they haven't done. And whenever you start to change the sending culture of a church, you're going to face some resistance. And people are like, we don't typically do that. We don't have a year and a half training process. We just used to send them all to the IMB, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. But you can't tell me that 18 months, and really for most of our folks, it's 2 years compared to 5 weeks. I mean, good old Zane Pratt, if I did a little name drop flex, was like, if every church had what you guys had, we wouldn't need Richmond. And so I think to get those things started, we need more leaders. And so I think if there's missions pastors or just folks that are like, man, I don't think we're supposed to go for X, Y, and Z reasons. And they're like, but I would love to do mobilization, what we do. Hey, awcamp@gmail.com. You can send it to me. I'd love to chat with you. And the reason I say that is because I think there are more churches out there, Paul, that have a vision to send, but they just don't know how to get there. And because they don't know how to get there, they don't put that over their congregations that often of, hey, here's the way to go. And therefore, more people that would be going aren't going because nobody's asking them and they don't know how to clearly get there.
That's a perfect segue to my last question, Andy. So let's say, you know, someone's listening right now, maybe somebody who's preparing to go overseas, maybe it's a pastor of a church here in North America. And he says, okay, Andy, you've convinced me. I want to be trained. I want to connect up with Launch Global. I want to bring their training to my church, to my city. What's their first steps? What advice would you give to them?
Yep. If it's somebody that wants to be trained, they can just go to launchglobal.org. And maybe we can put that in the, you know, the thing below, but launchglobal.org and where we, I think it says where we work, and you can fill out a short little jot form, and whoever you're kind of close by to, the city that you're nearest to, will reach out and contact you and just say, hey, this is what it practically looks like. If you're single or if you're not afraid to move quickly, that might look like you just moved there for a year. If you've got 3 kids in tow, I would just say this real quick, Paul. Of those folks that we've sent, the rough stat would say 40% of the folks that we've sent are families. And so a lot of times people might be listening to this, they're like, oh man, I just wish I was younger again. And I'm like, no, actually 40% of the folks that we send are families. And so if you're listening to this, the older your kids get, it does get more complicated, but it is possible. And so then you're probably looking at more like a 2-year move, right? And get here, be here for a little bit, get used to, you know, the new city, and then you'll be looking to transition again. So if you're a pastor or maybe you're a part of a church and you're like, man, how could we get Launch Global? First of all, would you consider being the mobilizer there? I wish I just had a pile of like 200 mobilizers behind me and we could just send them to Tampa and Denver and wherever, but we don't. And so whenever somebody says, hey, what does it look like to get Launch Global in our churches? There's a church we're talking to in Gainesville, Florida right now. And so I said to him, his name's Paul too. They're a church of 550 folks. I said, Paul, you got to get 2 other churches in the room and then I'll come in and we'll have a conversation about what it would look like for the 3 of your churches to work together so that when you take the kind of the bread and butter of what we do, which is a 9-month training group, but it's in your city, right? Now you all move to the same apartment complex, but it's in your city. And so for these 3 churches to all kind of work together and say, man, we're going to collectively train our folks so that we can sustain 1 group a year. And we'd say, man, we'll train the mobilizers. So this guy, Paul in Gainesville, has given us 2, maybe 3 folks that we can train, and they're going to be the ones kind of running, quote, the play there.
Okay. Wow. Andy, thank you so much for your time, for the conversation. It's always an encouragement to get to talk with you and to hear what the Lord's doing through you.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it.
To hear more conversations like this, please subscribe to this podcast. Be sure to follow us on social media. Thank you again for listening to this episode.
Amazon to the Himalayas is brought to you by the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. At Southern Seminary, we're preparing the next wave of missionaries, church planters, Bible translators, and more for a lifetime of faithfulness to the Great Commission. To learn more about how Southern Seminary can prepare you to take the gospel from the Amazon to the Himalayas, visit sbts.edu. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.